the Jack Wilson Quartet featuring Roy Ayers on Vibes. This tune is called Ramblin', and it actually became the leading track, the title track, of Wilson's 1966 LP. Yes, going back to the days of the LP. Jack Wilson on piano, Roy Ayers on vibes, Monk Montgomery on bass, and Barlow. I think it's Maria Barlow. No, I'm reading that wrong. My eyes are also going. Everything is shutting down on drums. And this was a composition by Ornette Coleman. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we pick up from where we left off with each other yesterday. At the top of the list, of course, is Venezuela. We started talking about Venezuela when we saw that things just weren't right. And at the same time, there was ample room. There was enough time. If members of Congress were concerned, there was more than enough time to raise an issue about what is the United States doing in Venezuela. But that didn't happen. It just kept developing and developing, as we noted, until there was this final outburst, which continues right now. What is it? I mean, why do we repeat the same scenarios over and over again? As if each time it is done, it's so different. There's no difference at all. And now that it has finally exploded, and we have an interloper deciding that he should be president and decided to install himself as president of Venezuela, and decided to see whether he could drag away enough military personnel to shore up his hand in his effort to just become the ruler. I mean, it's so bizarre. Elections were held. By all accounts, they went okay. And by all accounts, observers of the elections felt that the elections were fairly conducted. Nicolas Maduro, a protege of the previous president, there were so many reactions. There was never any, mild reaction to Hugo Chavez. People either loved him or hated him. But I would say generally, people were clear that Chavez had a vision for returning Venezuela to the people. Unfortunately, he died. And then we had Nicolas Maduro coming to power. Juan Guaido, a very ambitious, extremely ambitious young man, saw the opportunity to propel himself into leadership. And that is never a peaceful process. The elections had been held, the president had been named, and he'd been trying to pick up from where Chavez left off and try to manage the country, even with these sporadic, and it became increasingly common to have protests and objections and all kinds of things going on. And Guaido began to move beyond his private ambitions by seeking the endorsement of other forces both inside and outside of Venezuela. Well, there was an opportunity here with having an extremely ambitious young man wanting to move higher and higher, wanting more and more power, and presenting himself as Venezuela's version of a Barack Obama, you saw a keen interest in him by outside forces. What was to be the quid pro quo? Well, if they helped him, he would help them, and he would help them to very generous portions of the country and its assets. Venezuela has one of the largest deposits of oil in the world at the moment, and gold and other minerals. So even though internally it has a way to go in terms of providing what people see are the basic necessities of a good life, for someone who is ambitious, there's a lot of opportunity there to work with people who are themselves expressing an interest in Venezuela after all this time. Venezuela, that hated country, that communist country, that backward country, now looks really attractive. They could literally walk in and cherry pick what the goodies that they want with possibly a new leader, this Juan Guaido. And so he accelerated his program, Guaido, of diminishing the country's best asset, which is the faith of the people that things were going to get better and that they were working toward that, and that what mattered would be significant improvements in education, in employment, in the availability of basic resources like electricity and so forth. And they were looking forward to improvements. They were certainly not so idealistic as to believe that things in Venezuela would change overnight. That was not the point. But they did have a general view that things would be getting better. Little by little, things would get better. But they also knew that they were under siege by a consortium of outside forces, most notably the United States, to undermine this revolution in Venezuela and to essentially force a confrontation that would look as if it was a local confrontation, that the people themselves were fighting other people, other Venezuelans, over the matter of access to resources and so forth. And then Guaido decided, because it was May 1st, it's a significant day in that part of the world and in any part of the world that observes communist or leftist leanings, and of course Venezuela is one. All throughout the radical world, May 1st is a very significant day. And he decided to make it absolutely memorable and began a real physical confrontation. He managed to sway away from Maduro a few high-ranking military people, as if to suggest that he had the full blessing of the military. He didn't. Some members of the military under Maduro did split and go over to Guaido's side. And even though they did their best to market it as a wholesale betrayal, and therefore the military had turned its back on Maduro, that was not the case. So very much it's still at that stage. The struggle begins, continues, the struggle begins to take on a different shape now because Guaido has been served a lesson that all of that super confidence, all of that cockiness that he had isn't exactly winning over the people as he had expected. Meanwhile, his patrons, most notably the United States, are watching very closely, and we had a pronouncement from the Trump administration via Mr. Pompeo, who is the representative for foreign affairs, who says yesterday that the United States is seriously considering, it has not taken off the table, military action. Now, when in the world of diplomacy, and I use it loosely when it comes to Pompeo and the Trump administration, they don't know how to practice diplomacy. They don't know what it means. When you start using language like that, it is unmistakable that you are directly threatening a government. It so happens that although this is a small country, the support that Venezuela enjoys is significant. You have China, most notably. You have Russia. You have Cuba. And several other countries who have pledged unequivocally their support for Maduro. There was a bit of propaganda recently circulated that while the fighting began and continued, that Maduro was encouraged to flee and go instead to hide out in Cuba, that Maduro himself has denied. So the situation is very tense. We have not seen, as Americans, we have not seen an open discussion in Congress so that the people understand what the United States position is and what it is prepared to do and has been doing. It hasn't come up as a matter of national security. It still hasn't come up. What Americans know about what's going on in Venezuela comes from largely news releases that are, disseminated every now and then, and from people with special interests. As I said, in oil, in gold, in other resources, in free labor, all kinds of things have enticed support for Guaido, the upstart. But the situation is very serious. Why? Because now, if there is actual war, right now there's a kind of quasi-civil war, but if this should grow to the point of foreign nations involving themselves directly either in defending Venezuela or in advancing the cause of the predators. To take everything and doing so ostensibly at the behest of Juan Guaido. It's a very serious situation. If it should escalate to that point where the United States is now saying, as it did yesterday, that it is considering, you know, they talk this way, they're considering military action. That necessarily means there will be a military reaction. And look, from whom? These are not, you know, your neighborhood thugs saying, well, you know, we're gonna bring our guns out and do the best we can. That's not what's going on here. This level of violence now is going to involve nations that wage war on a massive level. Do we need it? No. And this is what is so puzzling. One would assume, at least in this, at this stage of our evolution, that any situation that comes up like this would immediately trigger a response from the world community of nations, a response aimed at getting things in check, so that we do not have a situation where the lines are crossed, all kinds of lines are crossed, and people give themselves permission to do all kinds of things. And now you have a full-fledged conflagration on your hands. We should always remember that whatever one chooses to believe, you know, politically, whatever it is your ideology might be, the central question here is the absolute interference by the United States in the internal affairs of Venezuela. And it was wrong from the very beginning. It's wrong now. And then we have the Trump administration escalating things because it likes war. It just thinks that, well, we drop a couple of bombs, we send over a couple of soldiers, none of them will be named Trump, and we just kill who we have to kill to make our point, and then we take off. We come back and collect the goodies. Very serious situation. So it is mind-boggling that the world community of nations has abrogated its duty to intervene here, to stop a conflagration. I'm not talking just about the world nations that are involved. Because if we were to, assess the situation based on that, we see that, in fact, Venezuela has more support than does, the president, the current legitimately elected president of Venezuela, Maduro, has more support than does Guaido. But we have the United States continuing to push an agenda, and we can't, it makes no sense. Except that somebody in the administration or someone in the White House has a death wish, has a desire to say, well, I did all these things, including A nice little war in my neck of the woods with my name on it. I don't know why Congress has not called an emergency meeting, several emergency meetings to discuss this in conjunction with other groups, regional groups operating in the Caribbean. I don't know why there's no interest in doing that. And I don't know what the United States, as a leading nation of the world, thinks it is gaining by that old retrograde position, political position, that's indefensible. It's like a powerful nation saying, you know, I don't like Trump. I like Fred Busby of Wilmington, Delaware. We're going to go in and support him. And we're prepared to bomb our way into Trump's submission. Only then would we consider that we have won this thing. That's how atrocious, that's how bizarre this whole thing is. How can a country, especially one that extols the virtues of democracy and whatnot, the sovereignty, the right of the people to choose its own government, and the right of a country to defend itself against unwarranted aggression? The Trump administration seems eager to make a point about its capacity for war. And it seems intent on reviving the notion that it rules this part of the world, unquestionably. And what it says goes. And we hear all these progressives talk. The Democrats are talking, they're all talking, but they're talking trash at this point. They're not talking the kind of talk that confronts the central problem here, which is the unlawful and illegal conduct of the United States. There's no question about it. We're not talking about it in the United Nations. They're not talking about it in any world body where these things are supposed to be hashed out, and people try to find other ways of doing things for the sake of peace. So I ask you, maybe there is a whole different idea here. Maybe there is a different kind of intention here. What do you think it is? Can anything be done, even at this late stage, with a president who we know is unstable, whose administration keeps rattling, you know, the bones of war? And who cannot defend itself based on the actions it already has taken and the actions that it intends to take. It has said yesterday. So there's no doubting what they're thinking in this regard. The United States has war, or is strongly considering, a military solution. Nobody asked it to come in and take a military solution. What right does it have to enter a fray where it is so clear what is going on? We have a bunch of people, perhaps they are agents of another country, and the ambitions, the blind ambitions of the leader of this movement are basically opening up the gate for for all kinds of craziness to occur. How does it get tamed without war? Is war inevitable? And how do we explain, how does the United States excuse itself in this outrageous conduct of jumping into another country's issues and saying, well, we'll take it from here, telling people that they could count on the United States to back their illegal actions. This is amazing. So I'd like to hear your views on that at 888-874-4888. We'll take this break and come back to your thoughts, which are important. Your thoughts are important right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about a major development in our hemisphere and involving possibly, as we've been talking about this for months now, possibly illegal actions by the United States. And just the same, U.S. involvement continues with no real resistance in Congress. They don't have anything to say about it. Why is that? How could that possibly be acceptable? We talk about checks and balances. How is it that a country, the United States, unilaterally can decide that it has the power and authority to do whatever it wants in Venezuela, no matter what people feel or think about it? And we have just yesterday confirmation of its mindset, that it is ready now to equip its decision with military action. Is this right? Is this the way we ought to go? Why aren't we hearing? Again, see, I don't give anybody the excuse that it is a matter for Congress. No. Why is it that we don't see the kind of uproar being expressed by those parts of our society, progressives, socialists, communists, whoever, the people who say they're so enlightened and who would not accept this? Why don't we see a major reaction to this development? It's getting to the point where it's about to happen. It's already happening, considering that the United States has literally intervened and interfered in a sovereign state in a way that cannot be explained. It cannot do so unilaterally. And we all standing around twiddling our thumbs, oh, we don't know what to do. What can we do? President Trump is hell-bent on doing whatever it is he wants to do. His administration yesterday confirmed it. We will do whatever it is we think we need to do. Even though in their explanation, everything, every premise is wrong and illegal. It means that the country is safe, or it feels itself safe, to make wrong decisions that imperil the entire country. Because nobody is presenting an objection. Nobody is really going up against this administration and saying, we are not going to side with you on this one. You're wrong. And you are imperiling the lives of Americans and others. The entire region is now at a point of conflagration, an explosion over the wrong-headed actions and decisions of the United States. It isn't, of course, the only entity making bad decisions within Venezuela itself. We have very bad decisions being made, but we are clear that they are making those bad decisions with 100% confidence in being backed up militarily. Absolutely. That's the basis for them making these horrible decisions. To tear down whatever there is as some kind of a protection against total lawlessness. They have a constitution. They have a set number of laws about how they're supposed to operate, and they're trying to do that in some cases. But we have people making arbitrary decisions. I don't like you. I will install, this is what he did, Guaido. I will install myself, I would confirm myself as president of Venezuela. He did it himself. And it passed muster in this region. So, if tomorrow, or the day after tomorrow, we are faced with the reality of war, we will have to absorb for ourselves, we would have to claim our role in the debacle. Because we've said nothing. We have done nothing. And we have not put our own country in check based on its illegal conduct up until now. So let's say I'm totally wrong about all of this. Let's say I'm hypothesizing. What say you? What is our situation right now? Given the update yesterday that the United States is seriously considering the military option. Now what do we do? Who do we blame? Who do we demand explanations from when thousands of people are killed? Where war is declared, essentially. War technically has been declared now. We have a government under attack. Despite its constitution, despite its own laws, there is a government under direct attack right now. And how, therefore, as a good neighbor as a member of organizations that pledge themselves to trying to promote the peace and trying to keep things under control. What have we to say? What have we to say as American citizens with our president behaving this way and his administration taking this position? I'm asking you, why is there this silence? And we can't get, whether they describe themselves as progressives or as liberals or as conservatives or as whatever, anti-war people, the religious community, nobody has anything to say. And therefore, by their silence, we know they are approving of the conduct of the United States. And that includes us. Nobody gets off the hook here. I'm asking you, you tell me, you tell the rest of us what you see developing here. What is the likely outcome here? Why is it important for us to raise our voices? I've been talking about this for months. We've been talking about this for months, about what was going on in Venezuela. And with little or no resistance to the beckoning of war. You see, and you know, these are the questions that we have to ask, because we're quick to point fingers at other people and say, well, you know, they didn't do anything. What are we doing? What are we doing? We're accountable too. And this is not some theoretical exercise. This is not just something that we can take, you know, stand at a distance and look at it and just go on about our business. This is a very serious matter. And no matter what our political stripes are, it comes down to the fact that we aren't doing anything, nor are we prepared to do anything. And worse, we're not interested in doing anything except talking about how keen we are in analyzing these things. We know what is happening, but we have no response. We have no answers when it comes to how do we marshal any resources so that the record shows that we were present and accounted for at a critical time. I feel very disappointed myself. I feel very disappointed that we have such a crisis in our own backyard, as it were, our neighbors, and yet we are willing to stand aside and allow a country to be absolutely devastated because they have a different ideology. They're doing their own thing their own way. And we have people being egged on and urged from the outside to tear up a country. They will be promised a few trinkets here and a few dollars there if they cooperate with this agenda to destroy their own country. could always find people to do that. But here in the United States, the land of the free and the home of the brave and the country that pledges time and again to come to the aid of the underdog. And we have not one thing in play in Congress to say, we cannot sit by and watch this happen. We cannot be part of this grievous offense of destroying a country because somebody has extreme ambitions, and that is the only explanation needed for all the craziness that is going on in Venezuela. Extreme ambition and the opportunity to steal the people's wealth at the behest of people we don't even know, countries and people we don't even know. I'm amazed that I'm not getting a single thought from you today on this. Have I troubled you with this discussion? It's not about feeling guilty or not guilty and that kind of stuff. It is about, this is the kind of politics that we have to become more involved in. We have to see the connections between what we say and do and the gravity of the consequences of it. We have at this moment, and let's be real about it, we have no vehicles that actually represent our collective thinking about this. We have no vehicles, not even on a people-to-people basis, where we send a truckload of aid. We have decided not to respond. We've decided not to know. We've decided not to be involved. Not even when our country is absolutely in the wrong. We can find no representation in Congress. We can find no refuge at all. We can find no ears willing to listen. And so we do nothing. How sad for us. How sad for us that we choose, in the face of what we see, in the face of what we know, we choose to be uninvolved. We choose not to be concerned. We choose to give this country a red light to do whatever it wants to do with somebody else's country. To adopt the position of an outlaw. That is very sad. And I hope as we rethink this, we rethink our own, we dare to present ourselves as agents of change. We dare to suggest that we are involved. We dare to suggest that we take seriously our charge of wherever we can to promote justice. It's happening right in our backyards, and from what I see, there is no cogent response, not from our neck of the woods. We do not want to be involved. We say, well, you know, they'll fix it. And we'll deal with those who survive. That's our attitude. We shame ourselves. We shame ourselves. And it's a sad, sad time for us, because that is the truth. We have decided to absent ourselves from this, to not pay any attention to it, to not do anything about it, to say nothing, to do nothing, except, you know, it's polite conversation. I did not expect this. Not at all. I expected at least some recognition, even if we feel constrained. But I felt that there would be recognition of our duty to resist, our duty to speak up for people who aren't able to speak up for themselves. This is not about defending Venezuela. This is about defending our own concept of what is justice, what is right, what is wrong. We have to speak out against it. But I don't think you can say that I'm exaggerating when I say that it looks as if we've chalked this one up. We'll give this to Trump. Whatever he wants to do, let him go ahead and do it in our name. And then after he does it, we'll talk about the things that he has done that we had allowed him to do. And we'll feel good still, because after all, we encouraged a discussion. Well, I would say that we came up very short here. Very short. And we have to look at that very seriously. Because this is not a theoretical exercise. This is a thing happening now and getting worse. And we are no different in our response from the ultra-conservatives or the Democrats or the wingnuts or the people who pretend that they're concerned. We have joined the club. So I would have to revise my thinking as it relates to a community that says, well, you know, I'm not sure I want to be involved in this. Or I am sure I do not want to be involved in this. We really have to revisit this. So I urge you to think about it. Think deeply about it. Okay, before I go, I just want to remind you that I will be coming to New York on May the 26th to give a little talk. And that's my hope. All these little talks should trigger introspection. And it should frame our action. In some cases, reframe our actions based on our political consciousness. This is where the rubber meets the road. We could talk all we want. But in times of urgency, we can't check out. We must show somehow that we were present and accounted for. Please reconsider and don't become an American. Please don't do that. Become a conscious part of a world that is seeking justice every day and looking to you and me to keep these fires burning and to keep people hopeful and to let them know that we're thinking of them. They're not a news headline. It's real life. We'll be all the better for it if we are able to summon up the courage in just one instance, just do one thing to account for yourself at a critical time. Please reconsider. All right. Thanks for listening today. Let's hope we all reconsider our actions and decide that whatever we are able to do to help, we should do. We should not let this moment pass. We should not be seen as, well, you know, we are sometimes involved when it suits us. I just got a note that all throughout the program today, we've been having some phone trouble. As you know, we're getting ready to move. So hopefully we'll be back in good shape tomorrow. I thank you. I'm not losing faith in you or me. I'm saying that we have to do something to change this lethargy that we have and exercise some kind of authority in a way that helps others and helps a situation. So I'll be in New York at the Community Church, 40 East 35th Street, on May the 26th at 1 o'clock. It begins, that's my talk begins, but registration is at 12:30. And by registration, we just mean just knowing who's here among us. And no charge at all. It's all free to come have a listen and to see each other and talk to each other and make ourselves known to each other. I'm looking forward to it, and I hope you are too. I'm so sorry about the phones today, but this happens. We have to be tough about things. The station is moving, so perhaps that means that that was an effect of the station moving, that the electronic part of it got a little wacky for a moment. But certainly, we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening today. Bye-bye.